Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow with Jude Law, Angelina Jolie, and Gwyneth Paltrow. And I recently finished a film called Golden Shoes, which is a very sweet kids family movie about soccer. And the stars of that are Vivica Fox from Kill Bill, John Rhys-Davies, who we all love as much as Vivica. He's, you know, he starred in all the Lord of the Rings movies, and of course Indiana Jones. Remember Salah, you know, so who was Indy's best friend? I think I'm just trying to think. Dina Meyer is also in it, and Joshua Morrow from The Young and the Restless, if anyone's a Y&R fan. But I also pulled in some fun things. Mary Wilson from The Supremes, I got her to come and do a cameo. Mm-hmm. And Montel Williams came and did a cameo for us as well. So, and David DeLuise, if any, you know, for all the kids who watch Wizards of Waverly Place. So, I think I did about 5 movies with his father, Dom DeLuise. So, love, that's a great family. So, you know, so there's that. And then today, I just came from the set where, we were shooting with Nia Vardulos, who is, you know, who was the star of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Remember that? What a great film that was.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anybody, if they want to, you know, if they want to see, you can always go to IMDb or my casting website, which is just craigcampobasso.com, you know, and see all the movies and all that good stuff. I've done them all. I love comedies, action, drama, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
and you apparently also love stuff in our genre, which is the world of the strange and the unexplained. And so you have started this project to do the film Stranger at the Pentagon.
Yes, yes. And, you know, how it all came about was I met Dr. Frank in 2001. Just by happenstance, I met a couple who had known him since the 50s. And they asked if I wanted to meet him, and I said yes. And I was having lunch with him 2 days later. I found out as I was growing up, him and his wife literally lived 5 minutes from my house. I had read his book in the 80s and, you know, and just felt very drawn to the material. Anyway, so we met and we instantly became friends, and I saw him at least once a week for lunch, from that time on till he passed away in November of 2008. And, you know, spoke to him at least, if it wasn't daily, every other day on the phone. So, I didn't set out to write the screenplay. It just sort of happened through a natural, course of events. He had called me and said a gentleman called him and wanted to make it into a movie, and he didn't know, since I was in the business, he wanted me to come and, you know, be with him at the meeting. And, anyway, this gentleman came and, you know, talked to him. I could not find the man's credentials anywhere online, nor did he have an IMDb page, which is, for those who don't know, is the Internet Movie Database, which lists everybody in the industry and all their credits. It's sort of like the Bible that we all use. So, so I, you know, I called the man up afterwards and I asked him if he could just send us his material, and he said he didn't do business like that. He only did business on a handshake. And I said, well, how can you do business on a handshake when we don't even know who you are? So unfortunately I had to turn it down for Dr. Frank. And when I told him, he was so visibly upset that literally a tear was coming down his eyes, you know, because it's been his dream to see this book come to life. So we took baby steps and decided to make, now I'm talking about the feature-length film,
mm-hmm.
Right, because we have the short film, which we've already shot, and then there's the feature length film. So at first we were going through that and deciding which way to go. Would it be from Dr. Frank's point of view, or would it be from Valiant Thor's point of view? And then decided that, you know, everyone on Earth would want to know about Valiant Thor and what his mission was and Dr. Frank's involvement, you know, how he came into being and into play into all of that. So that's where we started structuring and all of that. And I sat with him for many, many years, just listening to his stories, you know, with not only Valiant Thor, but the other people that were on, that are on Victor One, which is his, saucer craft, if you want to call it that. It's got, it houses 200 people. I think it's 300 feet in diameter. And it is, double-deckered. It's two stories. There were actual blueprints and everything that Dr. Frank, you know, had of the, ship, et cetera. He first went on that ship in 1968, was the first time that he went, but he met Valiant Thor, in December of 1959. I was 2 months old. So, anyway.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, have you personally ever seen Victor One, the spaceship?
I have not seen it with my bare eyes. I had a few people who have seen it from afar, or other ships in the Victor class genre. So there, his is Victor 1, then there's Victor 2, Victor 3, Victor 4, Victor 5, and it goes all the way up. Actually, in Stranger at the Pentagon, it does depict where all the craft are located in and around the Earth. And then there's a giant starship that's 14 miles long and 7 miles wide that also houses all the beings, enlightened beings, by the way, from across the universe, who were here to help the Earth through the transformation in bringing in, you know, higher consciousness so that everyone on the planet will become fully conscious. And,
you mean no more mushrooms?
No more mushrooms, man.
Oh my God, what will I do? Okay, did you ever get a chance to meet Valiant Thor?
I did not. Now, I did have an experience where on the first day of writing the script, I had a very, I call them lucid dreams. So you're in a dream, you wake up in the dream, and you're fully conscious. So it's like your spirit body is somewhere else having an experience, but you're awake and you're fully aware of what's happening. So I had a conversation with him there. And he actually showed me the entire beginning of the road of the making of the film. And he actually showed me sound stages and all of that and how things, you know, would sort of come about. And, you know, so that's really the extent of mine. I mean, I would love to meet him. Everybody would love to meet him. I get emails from people all the time who want to meet him. But on the last day of finishing the script, which is many, many, many years later, I was constantly calling Dr. Frank to get the correct information to just, you know, I was doing the summation at the end of the script, because we do end in the story in the feature film when he departs on March 16th, 1960. So,
okay.
And
now,
then
we have to step away for a break.
All right.
Okay. When we come back, I want us to jump into the story of Valiant Thor, and because I know we've got some folks listening who may not be familiar with that. We'll jump into that story of who he is and where he comes from, and how it is he came to have contact with the U.S. president. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Craig Campobasso. You know, I'll tell you, Craig, the problem that I'm having here, the problem is that I'm putting the O where the A needs to be.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's Campo Basso.
Like in Italian, Campo Basso.
Campo Basso. I'll try Campo to pronounce Basso. It, though. Yeah, there we go. Okay, Craig, let's jump into the story itself about Valiant Thor. He arrived at the Pentagon under police escort, did he not?
Yes, the Victor 1, or the craft, came in, landed at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning in an agricultural field in Virginia. There were several calls into the police station. One police car spotted it, followed it, came upon it with their guns drawn, and when Valiant Thor walked off the craft, just the love emanating and vibrating from him, they just actually just lowered their hands. They had a conversation with him. He said that he had an important message for the president. They radioed ahead. They said to bring him to the Pentagon. And mind you, they were calling everyone in because it was their day off. So this day also, which a lot of people don't know about, was also Pat Nixon's birthday.
Hmm.
So Nixon was a little late because it was her birthday. So anyway, he met with the Secretary of Defense, and then later on was brought over, met with Eisenhower, Nixon, the Joint Chiefs. After a meeting there, and what he came with was a divine design to implement through. He wanted Eisenhower to implement it throughout the United States and then the world. Eisenhower invited him or put him on VIP status, and they came to a conclusion that 3 years would be a good number for him to be here, and so he actually lived at the Pentagon in underground apartments for that 3 years. But of course, as Dr. Frank told me, even though there were guards and things outside his doors and locks, you know, he came and went as he pleased through, you know, their technologies and things like that. So so that's how he came to be, you know, to be here and to be there for the 3 years.
Let me interject something, and that is this. We have a photograph that is supposed to be a photograph of Valiant Thor.
Correct.
And for those who are watching our TV channel, it's appearing now. He looks exactly like us, right down to his haircut and his suit. How do we know this is Valiant Thor?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I can't prove it. But all I can do is give you the information that I got from Dr. Frank, which was, and Dr. Frank actually, this was, I'm sure you know who Howard and Connie Menger are.
Yes.
All right. This was taken on their farm in New Jersey when they were having a UFO get together, as they often did. All the photographs that were taken that day were taken by August Roberts, who was a retired Air Force photographer. Now, he called Dr. Frank after he was so excited, because he was very drawn to Valiant Thor, and, he was friends with Dr. Frank because Dr. Frank was also into ufology and the study of UFOs, etc. And as we all know, Dr. Frank sort of incorporated into talks he used to give on UFOs and the Bible and connecting all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. In. So,
okay, so the retired Air Force guy takes the pictures.
Yeah.
How did he identify that was Valiant Thor?
Well, he didn't know. Here's the thing. I'm not quite sure if Valiant Thor told him his name at that time, or if he just knew he was from somewhere else, because Dr. Frank, he went to Dr. Frank's house within a week, brought the photographs, and asked and said to Dr. Frank that that was a man from another world. And Dr. Frank said, you know, how do you know that? You know, he looks just like us. He said exactly what you said. And he said, first of all, the man had no palm or fingerprints. And that when he looked at him, it was like he could go deep into his soul and he knew everything about him. Hmm. And it just sent shivers down, you know, through him. And that he did speak to several people in several languages, their native languages when he was there. So now, Dr. Frank gave me Howard and Connie's phone number way back in the beginning when I first started writing the story. Had a nice long conversation with Connie. And she said that they had, there every time they had these things, there were always visitors there. There were always somebody from other worlds, but they all looked human, all of the ones that they were in contact with and had been for several years. So, they.
Okay, let me ask you your opinion on something.
Sure.
And this is going to sound like I'm blindsiding you, and I'm not, so I'm going to warn you up front. I'm just curious what your theory about this is, because I've noticed that when extraterrestrials make contact, even the human-looking ones, they make contact with us. If they give a name, it is always something like, you know, Valiant Thor or Zakon or, you know, something like that. You never hear of John or Bill or, you know, Charlie.
Right.
What's your theory on that?
I totally agree with you. But just so you know, the other two people in the photograph who were with him are his vice commander, whose name is Dawn, and then the other lady is another vice commander on Victor One ship. His name is Zan, and that's his wife, whose name is Jill. Now, I actually have been asked this question several times, and you know, a lot of people say, you know, if you were going to make up a name, you could have made up a better name than Valiant Thor if this was all, you know, a made-up story, exact, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, but my theory is, if Valiant Thor is a created being, he's an immortal angel, right, who means they do not die. Right, because see, when you think of Valiant Thor, you immediately think of Prince Valiant, and you think of the Mighty Thor, and, which are two cartoonish Marvel kind of, you know, sounding names. But then if you put it back into the perspective of, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, who knows how long this man's been living, who is an immortal angel in human form, he probably had the name first. So. I really don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, if I meet him, I'm going to ask him.
Okay, now well, that would be a good question. You know, one thing I've wondered is if Valiant, rather than being a name, may be a rank. Like, you know, Captain Kirk, Valiant Thor.
Actually, you know what? I never thought of that. That could actually very well be. You know, because they are Victor class saucers, so maybe Valiant is a rank.
Yeah,
that could very well be. Yeah.
Why do you think he's an angel?
Well, created beings are. I've always categorized them, you know, as angels in human form, because they're not born of man and woman; they're born from the Godhead. And you know, then you think, you know, the next question is, okay, well, how does that happen? How does somebody get born from the Godhead, you know? And the visuals that I've been shown when I've asked that is that, you know, that they can be created, as an infant from a womb of light and then given to celestial parents to raise, or they could, just be created fully conscious as an adult and start their mission. So, I mean, these are all things that, you know, that have just fascinated
me. How do you know he's an angel and not just an extraterrestrial human from somewhere else.
Because created beings are different than the extraterrestrial categories.
So how do you know he's a created being then?
Because that's what Dr. Frank said, that he was a created being and that he doesn't have a belly button.
Well, there you go.
So, and there is another created being on Victor 1 as well, whose name is Yanaya, and he is, he comes from Melchizedek.
When you say he comes from Melchizedek.
Melchizedek is the university, the spiritual university, where all beings will go and learn through, you know, once they sort of step off of, like, we're learning, here on this planet, we're learning duality. We're learning how to merge our heart and our mind, how to just be better people through, you know, our emotions are what fuel our actions. And, you know, hopefully as we continue on, as we get into older age, we learn our lessons and we're able to work our heart to actually start ruling our mind. So, you know, so then that's fusing. And then once we have fused and we sort of go into these universal harmonics, and if when we graduate off of this world, we go into the Melchizedek worlds where we start more cosmic training.
Okay, now this is information that you got from Dr. Frank Stranges?
Not that information, no.
No, okay. All right, so Valiant Thor, do you accept that photograph as being him? I mean, as far as you're concerned, you accept that as being Valiant Thor?
You know, I look at it and it resonates. You know, it resonates with me. Can I prove it? No. You know, I mean, when I took on doing this task with Dr. Frank, I just said, look, I will stay true to your story. I will stay true to, you know, to that. I've never met Valiant Thor, so I don't know if that is actually him, but I don't also doubt it because the photograph actually resonates with me that, that it is him, mm-hmm. you know, but I can't say, you know, it is, you know, as a matter of fact.
Dr. Stranges told us when he was with us last about his meeting Valiant Thor. And how that all came about, and at the Pentagon, it escapes me now. Did he meet him for a long period of time, or was it a short period of time? How long was that meeting?
I think it was somewhere around a half hour to an hour, somewhere in there, and then after that meeting. Which was in 59, Valiant left, I think, well, it was just about less than 3 months later, because he met him at the end of December in 59, and then Valiant Thor left in March 16th, 1960. But he did, Valiant Thor did come back in 1961 and contacted Dr. Frank, and then continued his friendship with him, you know, until his death in 2008. So, Valiant Thor, from what Dr. Frank says, is still here on the planet with Victor 1, his Victor class fleet.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We will be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. We'll continue with this amazing story. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is the Kevin Smith, and we're talking this evening with Craig Campobasso. Campobasso. I'm not going to get it right. I know I'm not. I know I'm wrong, though. I can tell I'm wrong.
You know. Everybody does it.
Is there another family name that is Campobasso?
Campobasso. No, no.
So I can't even be right half the time.
No, it's a little city outside of Rome, by the way, and they make olive oil there.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Campobasso.
Basso.
By the end of this show, And it will probably be completely unbelievable to you and certainly irrelevant, but I actually have practiced that today and still am getting it wrong. I mean, when you got a name like Smith, you know, anything beyond that kind of gets, you know. Okay, so we're talking about Stranger at the Pentagon.
Yes.
And talking about Valiant Thor. And so you're, as I understood what you said earlier, your focus for the feature-length film is to tell the story from Valiant Thor's point of view. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
How can you do that if you haven't ever met him?
Well, because I sat with Dr. Frank and listened to him tell me, you know, stories. And so each time I would do a version of the script, I would give it to Dr. Frank. The next time he met with Valiant Thor, he said, actually, Valiant actually held the script and that they actually don't read, they just absorb. And the process was actually quite interesting, Kevin, because Dr. Frank would say, he said, you did a good job. And I say, that's it? No notes? No changes? He said, no. So always the very next morning, I would wake up, and every note would be downloaded into my head, and I would just go to the computer and just sit there, you know, and make all the changes. And then as we were having to shorten the script, and went through that process for several years. So it was actually quite a unique experience for me.
Most people would not have the dedication or passion to stay with a project like this for years before the film is made.
Yes. Yeah.
Why? What is it about you that makes you able to do that?
Do you know, I when I was 26, I had a major spiritual awakening. And in the spiritual awakening that I had, I just really wanted to, you know, things that came to me and felt that it had a good message, and that everything in movies is about aliens coming to destroy the Earth and take the Earth over. Here was a story about a guy who actually came here who was trying to help the Earth and all of these other beings that came along with him, and how that process was and how it worked and what was in that divine plan that he brought. And you know, I mean, I drove Dr. Frank crazy with questions for many, 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 many years. So every time I had a question, I was able to get it answered. And if he didn't know, the next time he spoke to Valiant, or he did speak to Don, who was his vice commander, an awful lot. So Don would also, you know, relay the information to him. But as we were talking earlier, I just wanted to bring up, Kevin, on the last day when I was finished shooting the script before you went to break, I called Dr. Frank to ask him those last bits of questions. And he had his "there's another person in the room" voice, you know, which was, okay, fine, I'll ask him, sure, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden I heard a guy start talking in the background, and Dr. Frank burst out laughing. He goes, well, he's actually sitting right here. So as I asked the question, it's not that he put him on the phone. I heard the answers. Now, can I prove that it was really him? No, I can't, but the answers were coming, and I could hear the gentleman relay the answers. And then, of course, I hung up the phone and realized that I never once said, put him on the phone. Right? You know?
Are you satisfied personally that was Valiant Thor?
I'm satisfied with it, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am. I mean, it felt unique and real to me, because I've had other experiences with people that were in his crew, and one crucial one interestingly enough, and I'll just give you the sort of short, capsulized version, another vice commander on his ship, her name is Teal. She's not written about in the book, by the way. Only Dawn and Thawne are written about in the book. None of the other ones, including Yanaya, are even in the book. So I had, when I was writing my book, which I've been writing for like 25 years in between casting jobs, which came about through this major spiritual awakening that I had with, you know, with what I call master teachers from other realms. It's called The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial, I Am Taran. And during that time, when I would meditate, or I was getting information through meditations, through dreams, sometimes through light sources, meaning I've literally saw light bodies in the middle of the day. That kind of thing.
That kind of is disruptive to the movie work, isn't it?
In the beginning, it absolutely was. Because when I actually had the spiritual awakening, it ignited every cell in my body to wake me up to God and or to the creation or to the universe, whatever, however you want to say it. And everything I looked at, I saw the beauty behind the creation of it, and I literally wept. I would sob and sob and sob, and that was a process that went on for 8 months. So I could be casting a movie, and an actor would walk in, and I could like see who they were as a soul, and sometimes it was so unbelievably beautiful, I'd just have to excuse myself and go, and I would just go in the other room, and I would sob and sob and sob, get my composure, and then go back in. And it actually was a really nice process, because in the end, I really felt like my soul became immaculate, you know, and that's when I was also started, you know, to write that book. But to get back to Teal, I was meditating one day, and all of a sudden I saw this woman standing in front of a giant saucer with red hair, porcelain white skin, and green eyes in a powder blue spacesuit. And when I meditate and it would come through the back of your neck, like right here, I would get a click that just went like that, and then boom, like I'm looking at a real person, there they are. And this is when I saw this woman's vision. She didn't speak. I didn't know who she was. I just knew that she was somebody who was, what I got from her is she was somebody who was helping me with the task of writing and all of those things. Flash forward, mind you, again, she is not written about in Stranger at the Pentagon at all. And this happened in the early 90s, way before I met Dr. Frank. So we skip to where I meet Dr. Frank somewhere in 2002. He had gone to Victor One. He came back and he said, oh, somebody wants to say hi to you, wanted me to say hi to you. And I said, who? And all of a sudden, before he said it, I saw that woman in my head again, right? And she had been coming back as I was writing. I could feel her, and I could feel her energy, and I could see her in my mind's eye. And Dr. Frank said, Teal, she's a vice commander on Victor One. And anyway, I went red hair, and he's like, yeah, and I said, you know, sort of parted on the side. Anyway, we went back and forth with the description, and he was actually floored that I knew what she looked like, and then I explained my story to him. But the real truth of that comes many years later. I actually got
You've got about 1 minute till break.
All right. I'm going to finish that story after the break.
Okay.
That's okay. Okay. Only because it's really... it'll be a good cliffhanger.
I like cliffhangers. That's good radio, man. I appreciate that. Okay, so what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, is get back to that story when we come back from the break. This evening we are talking with Craig Campobasso. I said it slow, and I think I got it right. Did I get that right? Yeah, he's nodding. Okay, Campobasso. And he is a casting director. Some of the movies you've been to see, you got to see those people in those movies because this guy is the casting director. And so he is making a feature-length film, and it's about the story that Dr. Frank Strange just wrote about. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. And my best hopes, wishes, dreams, and prayers that you never suffer that trauma again. My guest this evening is Craig Campobasso. I got it. Yippee. I get a little star on my chart now. I've been murdering his name all through the show, but I'm trying. I'm really trying. You got to give me credit for that. We're talking about this feature-length film that he is making. He is a professional casting director, and a lot of the movies that you've been to see, you saw the people that you saw in the actors that you saw in those movies because of this man right here. And as we went away for break, Craig, you were telling us about this lady extraterrestrial.
Teal.
Yeah.
T-E-E-L.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So we flash forward several years, you know, after Dr. Frank had, come back and said, Teal said to say hello. And I started making the connection to this woman I had seen in this vision many years ago in a meditation, who was standing in front of a ship, which actually was Victor One. So, I had eaten some kind of food that gave me a really horrific stomach problems, and within 3 days I had to be rushed, to the doctor. I was there in the office for most of the day. They rushed me to the hospital that evening. They said I had a bowel obstruction. The only person who knew about this was my best friend, who she came and she got me. I had to go to the ambulance from the doctor's office to the hospital. She followed. And they said I had, this bowel obstruction. They were going to have to operate in the morning if it didn't pass. Mm-hmm. Now mind you, that evening when I'm sleeping, again, I wake up, I'm in this lucid dream, and I feel Teal again, and I feel water bubbles going through my entire intestines. Right?
Okay.
And yeah, which was an amazing experience. And when I woke up in the morning, I looked over and sitting down in the chair right next to my hospital bed was Dr. Frank. And the first words out of his mouth was, Teal called me early this morning and told me she fixed you up last night. So that was confirmation for me right there.
Okay. And you did not have
no idea that I was in the hospital.
And you did not have to have the surgery, right?
Nope. I told them in the morning. I said you have to take X-rays again. I know that it's fine. They did, and I walked out of the hospital in the early afternoon. So, wow. So that was my bit of confirmation right there.
All right. So let me ask you a couple of details about the film itself, and
sure.
Then we will open the telephone lines at that point. But when we say feature length film, what are we talking about? How long is that in order to be a feature length film?
Well, a feature length film is anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours, you know, unless you're making the Ten Commandments, which was 3.5 hours, but they usually don't make movies that long anymore. We have already made and shot the short film to Stranger at the Pentagon, which is, a sounding board, you know, to help with investors and, that goes along with the package through the production attorney out to investors to raise the money so that we can make the feature length film. So the short film has been shot. People can check it out. They can check out about it on StrangerAtThePentagon.com. There's movie stills, some little promos. There's a little video I did about the story mm-hmm. of Valiant Thor. And then I tagged it with actually Dr. Frank talking about mm-hmm. his first meeting with Valiant Thor. So what we are now is we're in post-production. Again, you know, for the short film, I'm doing big visual effects. We got James Cameron's guy, you know. We got our CGI supervisors, compositors, are the guys that have done Iron Man, you know, Snow White and the Huntsman, Riddick. They just finished one of them.
Riddick.
Riddick, yeah.
That's one of my all-time favorite movies.
I love that Riddick movie, the one with Judi Dench. Oh, mm-hmm. my God, that was so awesome. So we get a new Riddick coming. You know, so they've worked on, and Avatar, of course, you know, they worked on all those films. So they'll be on board for also the big feature as well. But they love this project so much, and they love that the visual effects, because the visual effects in this are going to be totally different than any other movie, because we're talking about spiritual technologies here. We're talking about Merkaba vehicles in which masters travel in. And, you know, so everything's going to look very cool and very different, and that, you know, the ships are organic, and that they're actually living beings. So all the things that these ships can do are beyond anything that's ever been done before in feature films. So when I first met with the major visual effects guys, they were just blown away, because I actually worked with an artist to bring all of these conceptions to life, you know, so that they can see, you know, the vision of it. So yeah, it's going to be very cool. So we're in that process right now.
Well, if they could handle Riddick, and if they can handle Avatar,
they can
probably do this. Yeah,
they can do this. They can do this.
Yeah, Avatar was another one that was really blew me away. You know, and it was interesting. I really loved that movie. I thought it was great. And then I read all these reviews about how it was, you know, a spawn of Satan and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, did they watch the same movie I watched? I mean, you know.
I know. It was an amazing spiritual piece. I mean, it was amazing that, you know, that he got something made that actually had a spiritual message. It was awesome.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, that's phenomenal, perhaps, you know, from your point of view. But here's what's phenomenal about that movie from my point of view.
Yeah.
That he was able to do that and still make it very interesting sci-fi.
Right. Yes. Yes. Entertaining.
Yes.
Entertaining. That's what it's all about. It's mm-hmm. the same thing with Stranger. Still going to be entertaining. It's going to be all those things. You know, these are not stories where things are shoved down your throat. These are stories that leave you saying, could this be true? Is this true? And it leaves the actual movie viewer, you know, walking away, asking more questions. And that's what we want, you know, because that's how we start opening doors to our own involvement, is by asking lots and lots of questions about different things. Every time I learn something, I've got 20 more questions.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, and that's actually exactly what this show is about. In that we try to bring information to people, and you know, I'm not for it, I'm not against it, other than I am for getting the information. And then let's ask a lot of questions. Well, folks, we'd love for you to join the conversation here this evening. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, that telephone number will work. However, we understand that can be kind of expensive from some places in the world. So if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we have an additional option for you, and that is, if you choose not to call us, you may choose to use the flash message option. So you go to my website, scroll down until you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it, it says flash message. If you're in the USA or Canada, won't work for you. Even if you send it, I won't see it. Okay, it gets filtered out. And that's because it's a talk show, not a type show. Okay. Let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Craig.
Hey, Brent.
I have a question for you, and this relates to some people have had movies that they wanted to make but couldn't make for various nefarious reasons. I'm just wondering if you have you had any interference or have you had cooperation from, let's say, the Pentagon or the powers that want to be?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, this is a kind of movie that normal Hollywood would not make because of the subject matter. Interestingly enough, through all of the fans and everything, how I actually got this going for the short film is I ended up doing, a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter, which everybody who wanted to see it happen made it happen, and then with all my connections in the business, got most of the things donated. I mean, we even got to shoot on an Epic Red, which is what they shot the Avengers on. Those cameras are
huge. Yeah, I was going to say, you need to tell people that is,
yeah.
Camera, it's kind of like the camera.
It is the camera, and we got the sound stages donated, the green screen stage. We probably had maybe 75 to 80 people in the big green screen day where we were there for 16 hours. Working, and if that was in a regular film without all these people donating their time who work in the business, it would have been $100,000 day. So that's why, Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow, that was never a studio movie. That was a guy who wrote a script and made a short film and actually got it to a producer who liked it, and that's how that film got made. The Saw movies, the horror films, they did a short film. That's how it got made. This way they get to see, the financiers get to see your vision. You can go and you can tell them your vision, but when they actually see it in film, on film, that's how it goes. Same with Lucas and Star Wars way in the beginning. 20th Century Fox had no idea what the look of the film was, and they were giving him such problems that he actually went and he had an airbrush artist make gigantic, things of how it was going to look. And once they got the concept, that's when, they greenlit the movie. So that's why we're trying to make the whole thing independent so we can keep the message. I don't want to see, what happened to Travis Walton's story. When they made that Fire Into the Sky in a movie many years ago, they made it into a horror space movie. I think people really want to see, they want the message, the real message, what the real intention was. So that's why we're doing it all this way.
Congratulations. I wish you well, and I'm just going to say possible disclosure a little bit.
I'm hoping. I'm with Steve Bassett, man. I go to his meetings once a month.
All right.
Thanks, Brent. All right, folks, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. This is your opportunity to talk with a guy that makes a lot of things happen that you see on your movie screens and your TV. And he is working within our genre on a film about a story that you heard about right here on this show. Actually, several times, Dr. Frank Stranges himself was with us. And he talked about this story. And he talked about Valiant Thor, and he talked about Valiant Thor's meeting with the president and the vice president. that meeting with the president, which was Dwight Eisenhower, and the vice president, really didn't turn out too well for Valiant Thor, did it?
In the end, Nixon actually was more of a champion where towards the Valiant Thor cause. You have to remember this is when he was vice president. Mm-hmm. Eisenhower had so many things on his plate. It was there. So it was really Valiant Thor's dealing, I think, more with the military brass, with Nixon trying to push things and get things through. That's an interesting concept. You know, if we really are, Kevin, talking about a created being who is from another world, to put them in the landscape of the military and the government, that's a fascinating story right there. You know, when you really sit down and you think about it, you know, the conflict, you know, because if you're a created being, you're already fused. You're already working with your heart and your mind. So, you know, how does that dichotomy sort of come in, you know, to play with all the other characters? So,
well, as I understand it, he offered lots of great stuff, cures, yes, for things and so forth, and he basically was turned down because he didn't bring weapons to offer.
Right. Yeah, they wanted his space technology. And you have to understand, his technology was far beyond any of the other races' technologies, meaning that their technologies were based on organics and spiritual, you know, on spiritual principles, meaning that, like I said, the ships are all organic. They're actually living consciousness. They have a brain. They think. You can talk to the ship. You can do things beyond the norm, beyond, you know, anything. There's things when you're walking, you know, it's like you're walking on air. If you were to fall, the air in the ship would know it, calculate it, and use the air to put you back on your feet. I mean, little simple, cool things like that, you know. One of the most fascinating thing is the History Hologram Machine, which is where there are all of Earth's history put on coins, and if you wanted to watch a certain segment of time, you could put it into the history coin and actually watch it like a movie. And they had small versions of this, and then they also had a big theater version, which is like looking, you know, it's hard to describe, but it's like looking at like somebody standing here and here and here. So your depth perception was beyond 3D. It sort of almost got into the multiple plane kind of, feel. So all of this history was on coins. And I just thought, you know, to me, that was the most fascinating thing. I think I would just live in a machine like that, going through, you know, not only, you know, the history and things of the earth, you know, that happen here on Earth, but, you know, even the history of the universe and worlds and planets and, you know, species and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the big commodity in the universe, as they say, is DNA.
Did Valiant Thor ever say to Dr. Strange anything about other species of off-worlders that did not look like humans?
Yes, he talked about the greys that do the abductions, and he also talked about, he said that Valthor said, if you ever see a ship that is shaped like a beehive, that they are one of the most negative races in the universe, and to run. And, you know, I started thinking about that, you know, and this was many years he told me this. And do you remember that guy in Gulf Breeze?
Yes.
What's his name? Walters? Walters?
I think so, but I'm not sure.
I can't remember, but if you remember the photographs from that, where he had photographs of them, they look like a beehive. You know, so the listeners can just go into Google and type in, you know, Gulf Breeze, Ed Walters, something like that.
I think it's Ed Walters, but, I mean, heck, yeah. I can't even say your name, so, you know. Let's go to the telephone caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Charlotte. I'm calling from Silver Spring.
Hello, Charlotte.
Hey, Charlotte.
Hi, and Mr. Campobasso said that Valiant Thor is still on Earth.
Yes.
Yeah, is he likely to show up at the premiere of your movie, or do they interact?
Wouldn't that be cool? I Dr. Frank used to tell me, Don and Thawne, who are two of the other vice commanders, when Dr. Frank especially would go around the world and speak, and, I mean, he spoke, you know, with people like Wernher von Braun and huge people around the world back in the heyday. He used to fill stadiums in Korea, where even the president of Korea at the time, I think, met him at the airport. But, but he said that once in a great while, all of a sudden, if he was speaking to a group, Valiant would appear in the audience. And that there was one story where he appeared and two women spotted him and stood up and, were saying, you know, Dr. Frank, he's right there. Let him speak. And he said that Valiant Thor crossed his arms and shook his head no. And then when they went towards him, he just vanished. So that's one story, that I heard throughout the years. But usually Dawn or Thawne was usually with him during those things. I have spoken to several people who said that throughout the years they had seen Dawn from afar. You know, because everybody knows what he looks like from the photographs. Although, that his hair is a lot lighter brown than it looks in the actual photographs that were taken in, you know, back in the 50s.
Mm. So. Also, I wanted to ask you, Timothy Good, who is a British researcher, when he was commenting on the Valiant Thor case, he thought that the photograph of them at the picnic, I mean, I thought it looked authentic and resonated with me, but he said he thought it looked, they didn't use Photoshop, but he thought it had been, you know, been faked in some way. But you're confident that that's a real photograph?
Well, the photo was actually taken back in the 50s before there was Photoshop.
Yeah, I know.
And I actually have the slides. They made slides back in those days.
Okay.
Of those photos. So, no, those photos aren't faked at all. I mean, you can't fake those photos. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, Jim Moseley, if anybody knows who Jim Moseley is.
Okay, you're going to have to hang on and tell us when we come back. And Charlotte, hang on, and we'll get back to you right after this break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we shall return. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Craig Campobasso. And we're hearing some...
Very good.
Well, thank you. I'm slow, but I get there. All right. We also have on the telephone with us Charlotte from Silver Spring. Charlotte, are you still with us?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something before we get back to your discussion here with Craig. You said you're from Silver Spring. Is that Maryland or New Mexico?
Maryland.
Maryland, okay.
Maryland.
I thought so, but there's also one, you know, out in New Mexico, so. Okay, yeah. So Craig, you were answering Charlotte.
And what was that question again, Charlotte?
Well, it was about the authenticity of the photograph, and you were verifying it.
Yeah. So, you know, again, you know, it was taken by a retired Air Force photographer named August Roberts. And, you know, like I said, back in those days, you couldn't fake the photos. So, you know, I actually have the slides. You know, Dr. Frank gave me the slides of all of the photographs that were, you know, taken that day. But, oh, I know what it was. I was talking about Jim Moseley. Jim Moseley was actually there that day that those photographs were taken of Valiant Thor. I was looking through all of the photos, and I pegged him, you know, because he would have been he would have been like, you know, 18, 19, 20. And, we were trying to figure out which one he could have been on the phone, you know, when I was talking to him about that, because Dr. Frank had connected me, you know, also into him, you know, to speak to him about, you know, what he knew, et cetera. He didn't remember too much from there. He didn't look at them any differently than anyone else, or couldn't remember anybody that was actually there. So,
but wasn't ever photographed or in any way logged in at the Pentagon? Was he a physical presence there? Because I was reading when Dr. Strange first met him that the office workers seemed oblivious to it.
Yes.
And,
they were oblivious to it. And again, you know, I think when you're, I think the easiest thing we could call it was a Jedi mind swipe before we knew that it was a Jedi mind swipe. You know?
Well, it could be that, but it could also be that he looked just like everybody else, and put him in a suit and walk him down the hall. You know, back then, you didn't have all the intense security measures that we have now. I mean, just think of the intense security measures you go through just to buy a pair of underwear. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, we live in lockdown USA. But it didn't used to be that way. And even at the Pentagon, I mean, look at the story of how Dr. Strange just got in to meet him.
Yes, absolutely. He went through two checkpoints and had no badge. And, you know, again, you know, did those guys see something there? Or, you know, was it just because he was with the woman who worked at the you know, Pentagon, who in the book, her name is fictitious, as Nancy Warren. So.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have to be a Jedi mind trick.
No, actually, you know, you never know. I mean, Dr. Frank used to go and talk to the generals and talk to them about, you know, trying to get UFO information and things like that. You know, he was able to just walk right in. You know, he could walk in their office, you know, and sit in the lobby and that kind of thing, you know, but there wasn't anything to keep him from even, you know, not even getting on the premises, you know, back in those days.
And are you convinced that they do come from Venus, or was that just a cover story?
Well, the thing is that all of the planets throughout our universe are populated on the inside. So they can take, and it actually makes sense when you think about it. You don't have all the outside interferences like we have with meteors and weather and, you know, the ozone depleting and all of that kind of stuff. But they have the technologies which we would call a synchrotron sky, where they can make something look like it's infinite, and that synchrotron sky can still give you the feeling of when it's day that it's day, and when it goes into night that it goes into night. They also have these on giant motherships and things. So, you know, planets really basically are giant spaceships. They're just stationary, you know. So that explains, you know, all of the gases and all of that. But, you know, have I been there? No.
Yeah, but what about the story about Valiant Thor being from Venus?
Yeah. Dr. Frank said that that's where he's from, and most of his immediate crew were from Venus. I know Teal is from Venus. I'm not sure where the other ones are from. I am. Unaya and Yo, that's his name. They're from the opposite end of the universe, and they're from the numbered planets. But the other ones like Dawn and Thawne and Zan, I'm not sure exactly where they're, you know, where they originated from.
Adamski's visitors were also supposedly from Venus too.
Yes.
In a similar time frame.
Yes. Yes. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, and it is our closest neighbor.
That is true.
Right? Yeah, our closest neighbor. So, yeah.
Now, for both of you, a couple of weeks ago, on this show, we were talking, I was talking with a couple of other people making a film about Van Tassel.
Yeah.
And okay, and so in the process of that, I showed a photograph. Now, this photograph was taken at one of Van Tassel's conventions, which was open air out at Giant Rock out there in California.
Yeah.
And this photograph shows a lady sitting at a table and a guy sitting there. This is all outside. They're sitting there, and she's got a sign, you know, she's selling a book, and the sign says, My Trip to Venus, or something like that. So it was Venus. Oh, what was interesting about the photograph is behind them is where all the cars are parked, immediately behind them.
Right.
And right next to one of those cars, looking straight into the camera, is the very first director of Project Blue Book. So he was there. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm very familiar with that story. I actually know the sisters who own the Integratron. Dr. Frank, you know, used to, before he even met Valiant Thor, used to host the space conventions out there with George Van Tassel and all of those guys. I've been out to the Integratron many times and several times with Dr. Frank. And the last time I went there with Dr. Frank, they had restarted the UFO space conventions. So they were actually held in the Integratron. And then we would all go out to Giant Rock. But the sisters that own it, one of them whose name is Joanne, what we did is we had Dr. You know, there when I went out with Dr. Frank ahead of time, he told us all the stories about, you know, being there and, you know, back in those days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I've met Bob Short, and Bob Short is actually had videos taken of there, you know, one of which I got from him. You know, he's the last guy who's left standing from that era. You know, Wendell Stevens was there when Dr. Frank and I spoke, and, you know, and he's gone, but, you know, it's amazing that all the people from that Giant Rock era are now gone. So, and I know that they were making a movie about George, and that'll be fun. Mm-hmm. That'll be really, really fascinating.
Well, the one guy that's not gone who was raised out there at Giant Rock is the nephew of Van Tassel, and he's involved in making that movie. Charlotte, do you have another question or comment?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Charlotte.
All right. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889 is the number to call, and you can speak with Craig Campobasso. Campobasso.
And by the way, you know, Kevin, the book is out of print now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there a few of the other books that Dr. Frank had, Outwitting Tomorrow, which was advisor was Valiant Thor. That's a very hard book to get. They're going on Amazon for over $100, and some, if they're signed by Dr. Frank, are going for hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But if anybody's interested in getting them, you know, they can go to strangeratthepentagon.com. Because we're just doing a last little sort of fundraiser to help pay for the rest of post-production. And people, there's right on the front cover, there's a a thing for our Indiegogo. If you just click on that, you can get the book autographed by me, a download of the feature of the short film when it's done, and a bunch of other cool stuff for $25. So you can't beat that. There's lots of other cool stuff there, but because I get emails from people all the time who are like, "Oh my God, it's so expensive. You know, I want to read it. You know, but you know, these books are old, so they're now out of print." And the publisher gave me what they had left to use for this, you know, for this campaign. Mm-hmm. So,
all right, so let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Lasha from Vancouver.
Hello, Lasha.
Hi.
Hi, Lasha.
Hi there. You know, I've never heard this story before. I find it fascinating. I have some questions and things to think about, though. I think this guy, this Valiant guy, certainly was a dimensional being, but I'm wondering, his mission was to spiritually help evolve the planet. Why go to Richard Nixon? Why go to the American military?
Well, the plan was a plan to implement throughout the United States to eliminate sickness, disease, prolong life, and eliminate poverty. And it was a design that has worked on many other worlds that he brought here. So of course he would have to go to the people who could actually get that implemented, and that's why he decided to stay at the Pentagon for 3 years, you know, for them to discuss this proposal and how they could implement it and how it can, you know, be seen to fruition. But of course in the end it was squashed, because it would eliminate doctors, pharmaceutical, all of the monetary system things. So that's why it was squashed in the end.
Was it just the U.S. or was it other countries?
No, it was just the U.S. at first, but since it never went beyond, beyond the U.S. or was never implemented in the U.S., it just never went anywhere else. Now, who's to say?
We got a break coming up here in about 30 seconds.
All right, but who's to say he wasn't in contact with other people, you know, throughout the world as well? So that I can't tell you. I don't know that.
Okay, now, Lasha, can you hang on?
I sure can, Kevin.
All right. All right, and I certainly hope our guest this evening can hang on, because we need him back, even if I can't say his name. We need him back on the other side of the break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after this break, and we will continue the discussion of this fabulous, interesting story right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are on Final Approach, ladies and gentlemen. And that means we only have a few minutes left in this show. We're talking this evening with Craig Campobasso. Am I getting that right? Campobasso? Well, okay. Say it for me.
Campobasso.
Oh, not Camp. Okay, Campobasso.
Yeah, Camp. Like Campobasso.
Man, I worked so hard on getting that last part right, and I blew the first part. On the telephone with us, Lasha from Vancouver. And so where were we?
We were talking about why go to the Pentagon and why go to the military to try and change the consciousness of the planet.
Well,
it's kind of like landing on the White House lawn. If they ever do that, I believe it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if there'd be better ways to do it. I mean, I would go to the Pope, or I would go to just individuals that need to have their consciousness raised. Being in the bottom of the Pentagon doesn't seem to me to be the way to reach people.
You know, if you get the consciousness of the population of the planet raised, they themselves will put the dipsticks out of business.
Right.
True.
Right. Right. But if you, what I was talking about earlier is, the book that I wrote prior to meeting Dr. Frank when I was having, after I had my this major spiritual transformation, which is called The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, I Am Turan. That book is about how that is being done and implemented through a program of raising consciousness. So you can explore it there and see the website's Autobiography of AnET.com.
Okay,
so Sylvia Brown, if you're a fan of Sylvia Brown, the psychic and author, she wrote the foreword to that book.
Oh. Okay. So, I'll have to take a look at that book, but it just I worry that to trust extra-dimensional beings without really kind of knowing their agenda and stuff, because they can appear to be one thing and actually be another.
So how well do we know his agenda?
Well, you know, here's what I always say is, what do you feel when you hear the story? What do you feel when you look at the photograph? What do you feel when you finished reading Stranger at the Pentagon? Do you do you resonate with the material? You know, that's the only thing that I can say. You know, I resonated with the material. I really connected with the photographs that were in that book, and I was really blessed to know Dr. Frank all these years and hear his stories. And you know, if somebody was making something up, he couldn't make up all that he made up, but still be able to tell the story time and time over and over again. And I'm not just talking about the basis of the story. I'm talking about all of the little things that nobody ever got to hear, about the little nice private moments and the stories and the things, you know, that happened when, you know, he was with them and that kind of thing. So, you know, so to me, you know, it is very, very genuine. But that's what I say to everybody. You know, if you see a ship in the sky, you don't know what's in there. You know, what do you feel? Do you resonate with it? Do you feel, you know, it goes with what you're feeling on the inside, you know?
Okay, so now let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And this is for both of you, and you'll both have to answer very quickly because we're just about out of time.
Okay.
Taking what you've just said about what do you feel? Okay,
yeah.
Isn't that a very dangerous approach when you're dealing with one of us, our species, who has spent their life out of touch with consciousness and out of touch with feeling, and all of a sudden they have an emotion, and because they've seen this ship, isn't that a little bit iffy?
I think it depends on your level of evolvement at the time.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes,
if you're dealing with a person, which I think would be the majority of the planet, who have, you know, they spend their entire waking moments wrapped up in, I got to get up, I got to go to work, I got to earn a living, I got to, you know, and they're not in touch with all this kind of consciousness stuff.
I agree. I think
you're right.
Waking up the planet is not going to be something that happens in a one-stroke thing. It's going to be very gradual. I don't think it's going to be someone appearing here and telling us to wake up.
No,
it has to come from us.
No, we have to wake up. It's up to each and every individual to wake up. It's your choice, you know.
Lasha, thank you for the call. I'm going to have to run because we're close to the end of the show.
No problem.
Thank you, Lasha.
All right, we have a quick flash message from Dave in Australia. G'day, Kevin. Please ask Craig if he has an ETA for when we will get to see this movie.
The short film, hopefully we'll have it done by the end of the year or the fall. It just depends on the expediency of our visual effects guys. So we're praying, and then we'll have a big, you know, we're going to have a screening here in Los Angeles, and then hopefully that will catapult us into getting, you know, the big one off the ground as well, so, which will be real exciting.
For lack of a better shorthand term, I'll call them extraterrestrials. They're off-worlders and not from here.
Right.
So, do these guys have rock bands?
There's a Valiant Thor rock band. Did you know that?
I did not. I did not. I don't doubt it. See, I was thinking about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and you know how they, you know. I just wondered if these guys, you know, if they have, and we always hear rock and roll will be here forever. It's never going to die. So you know, I just wondered.
Yeah, absolutely. They like music too.
Well, I would think so. Yeah. All right. So. You still have the crowdfunding going on to get the short film done. Is that right? Or you've already done the short?
No, that's correct. We've got 8 days left on, you know, Indiegogo.com, and you can just type in Stranger at the Pentagon, and it'll take you there.
How does that work? I mean, they what, make a pledge or a donation or what?
Yeah, they make a donation along the side. There's all different kinds of really cool Stranger at the Pentagon gifts, and, you know, they can become an associate producer or a producer on the film. They can get all of Dr. Frank's books. I actually have Victor 1 posters with the actual blueprints. There, you know, you can't get those anymore. And then we're having a movie poster done, which I'll get this weekend, which people will be able to get by, you know, donating and, you know, all that good stuff. So it goes, you know, so they make a pledge, and then, as soon as it's over, everybody will get sent all their good. You can get autographed books by all the cast, autographed screenplays by all the cast.
Who is your casting director on this?
You know, it was me, and I made my casting associate also was a casting director on it. And if anybody's a fan of Days of Our Life, Eileen Davidson, who is plays Kristen DeMira as one of our stars, and Joshua Morrow, who plays Nick Newman on The Young and the Restless, is another one of our stars. And you'll notice all the generals and all the people in the, you know, who are filling out all the other parts are these amazing character actors who've been around a long time. You'll be able to see that on the Stranger at the Pentagon website under movie stills. So, you know, you can check all of that stuff out there as well, you know. And if you can't find the crowdfunding, you can just go to Stranger at the Pentagon and click on the Indiegogo little icon. It has a photograph of our actor, Jeff Joslin, who played Valiant Thor in the movie.
Okay, you know. we're going to have to go because the end of the show is on us, but I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Kevin. That was so much fun, and the time flew by.
Yeah. All right, stay with me for a moment. I'll talk with you after we get off of the air. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a fascinating story, Stranger at the Pentagon. We've had Dr. Frank Stranges here live on this show, and well worth checking out. All right, that's going to do it for this evening. That's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You may call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long.